Hey guys, this is Nishant and welcome to another episode of the Nishant Garg Show. Before we start our podcast episode with this amazing guest, I have an announcement regarding the retreat. So if you did listen to the last few episodes, you know what I'm talking about. I have been promoting the retreat, Rite of Passage Retreat, which is going to happen in Austin, Texas on December 8th weekend, from December 8th to 10th. And the early bird offer ended on Friday, the October 20th. So early bird offer was saving you $300. And since the early bird offer ended on Friday, and the price goes up by $300. But what I have decided is to not increase the price. So the price of the retreat is going to be the same, $1,497. Again, $1,497. It's going to be the same, but the ticket sales closes on November 5th by midnight Central Time. So guys, I would really appreciate if you can support me. If you can show some love, if you have been supporting a podcast, I would love to see you. I would love to have you on this retreat. It's been a long time coming, this retreat. I would love you guys to join me on this retreat. So guys, you have 2 weeks of time. There will not be exception beyond that. And my heart wants to make it accessible and to make it affordable to as many people as I can. Therefore, I'm not increasing the price. So my initial intention was to increase the price after the early bird, but now we are not doing that anymore. The price stays same, but the ticket sales closes on November 5th by midnight Central Time. So guys, you have only 2 weeks, and that's pretty much about the retreat. And if you are new to this podcast, if you don't know what I'm talking about, there is a link, theRiteOfPassageRetreat.com, in the episode description. If you will click on that link, you can see all the details. Who is it for? Who is it not for? What would you gain from this retreat? What are your desires, pain, frustrations, and problems? And what other outcomes that you will receive? And you can sign up from there. That's pretty much. And now, without further ado, please enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with my dear friend, Kyle Niedrich. Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Sean. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. We met at a business conference a few months ago, and then we got to spend some time in Idaho. Not in Idaho, we got to spend time in Utah. I keep saying Idaho because I have some love for Idaho, and you were born and raised in Sun Valley, Idaho, the place that I really love going to. So thank you for showing me Park City and Salt Lake City. We got to go on an amazing hike, and it was so amazing. And while I got to learn about you, your family, and your story, I thought it would be an amazing experience to have you on the podcast and to talk about your religion, your faith, your transition process. So Kyle, I think we can start from, where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like?
Yeah, it was great, first of all, to meet up with you in Utah and go on that hike with you and connect with each other in nature. That was really enjoyable. And yeah, so my background, personal history, is that I was born, as you mentioned, in the tiny town of Sun Valley, Idaho, and was raised in the Wood River Valley. Sun Valley it's kind of confusing, but Sun Valley is a town within Wood River Valley. And there's Haley, Ketchum, and Bellevue. And my parents moved around a lot within the Wood River Valley because my dad was moving houses and doing a lot with real estate. So that's where I grew up, in a magical place. Lots of outdoor activities, sports, hiking, mountain biking, swimming in mountain lakes. So it was a great childhood. My parents are amazing people. I have 3 siblings. I'm the second oldest. I have an older sister and 2 younger brothers. And one of them, the one that's right younger than me, passed away on Bald Mountain in Ketchum. It's the Sun Valley ski resort that the area is famous for. He was speed riding, and that was in 2016. So he was flying and skiing and was doing a technical maneuver, doing a barrel roll, and something happened. No one really quite understands, but somehow he just ended up crashing to the ground in the middle. So he did the loop and just kind of like over rotated. And then for some reason, he just went straight to the ground and died on impact. So it was a crazy experience, and it is part of, you know, it's all part of my journey. And yeah, so we definitely connected on that level where you've lost your brother as well. And that's something that, you know, we all go through at some point. We lose someone that we love and brings up a lot of questions, and our perspective on life changes and all that. So we can talk about that later as well. But sure. So then I ended up going to Utah State University here in Logan, Utah for 1 year. And then I served a 2-year mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as Mormonism. And I went to Columbus, Ohio. And at the time, it was a great experience. I learned a lot. And looking back, I can see how it hindered my growth. But at the time, I viewed it as a growth opportunity, and went to Utah State for another 5 years after that. Just getting my undergrad, I switched majors from pre-med to pre-optometry to pre-physical therapy, exercise science. So I kind of did a lot of classes, got involved a lot with a lot of clubs. I started several clubs.
What kind of clubs?
So I started the optometry club, pre-optometry. I started a club for people with celiac disease. We called it Aggies Against the Grain. I started a ski club, and my brother Jordan, who passed away, we organized ski movies and sold tickets and things like that, and along with another friend of his, a roommate, Brandon. So all three of us organized those and marketed for those. So that was a fun experience with him. Yeah, so I really enjoyed my college years. That's where I met Jamie, my wife of 10 years now, as of May. We met in a ward, is what they call the church congregations, a singles ward. So all the members, except for a few of the leaders, are students. So that's where I met her. I was assigned in that ward to be her, essentially like what they call now, they've changed the term from a home teacher to a ministering brother. So you're assigned, everyone in the ward is assigned to minister to several other, in this case, people. So I was assigned to Jamie and her roommate and several other of my peers, other male students. And I would go, you're supposed to go visit them and teach them a lesson once a month. That was kind of the prescribed thing. So that's how I met Jamie. I called her up and said, "Hey, I've been assigned to be your home teacher. When can I come by and visit?" And the rest is history. We fell in love and got married within 7 months, which is pretty typical for Mormons to get married very quickly.
And how many kids do you have now?
And we have 3 kids. A 5-year-old, 3-year-old, and a 1-year-old.
Okay, great, Kyle. So we started from your childhood. We went to your college. Now you have kids. You have mentioned church and Mormonism a few times. So if you go back in your childhood, what was your relationship like with church, and how did your parents raise you in Mormonism? And so if people, I didn't know much about Mormonism. We were on the hike and you were describing things about Mormonism. So if you could explain what is that religion? People, listeners who are not aware of this religion. So what is that religion, and what was your relationship like with that religion while growing up?
Well, I'm a 7th generation member. The church started in 1830. That's when it was organized by Joseph Smith Jr. And my family joined over in Europe. They took a boat because that's what the leaders of the church said to do, to come to what they called Zion. They were gathering Zion up in preparation for the second coming of Jesus Christ. And so everyone was coming over. My ancestors pulled hand carts. So they filled these, it was for affordability. They couldn't afford a team of oxen and wagons. And so they got hand carts, filled them up, and pulled them by hand, you know, over 1,000 miles all the way to the Salt Lake Valley. So it's deep in my DNA. I think there's some definite, some, you know, probably generational trauma, I think is what they call it, from all of that. And yeah, so for 20 plus years, I mean, well, I'm 35 now. So, I mean, really for the past 20 years, as of 2 years ago, I was very consistent with being a very active member of the church. I did all the things that they asked us to do. You know, I'd pray 5 times a day. I would study the scriptures, the written word, the words of the, what we call living prophets. There's 15 living prophets that the church claims are just like the ones that follow Jesus, the 12 apostles. They have the same priesthood authority, is what they call it, which means that they have the authority to act in the name of God, to speak for God. I read what the Mormons call scripture, the Book of Mormon, which is a record of the people who were living in the American continent, just like the Bible was written by the Jews in the Middle East. So I'd read that basically every day. You know, I did a lot of service, the ministering, went to church every Sunday. I had a calling or multiple callings in the church. I would go to temple twice a month. In addition to church, I would pay 10% of my income since I was, I mean, I remember when I was 5 years old having a little box and there's a little hole to put in savings, spending, and tithing, you know, or mission. Actually, it was the savings was for my mission. I was saving money because you pay your own way to basically be a salesman for the church. So they don't even pay you.
Salesman for the church.
Yes, that's exactly what it is. And looking back now, I understand that. But at the time, I thought I was, you know, I was proselyting. I was spreading the good word, inviting people to come to Jesus and pay 10% of your money to the church. But anyway,
so there's so much to uncover in what you just described. So my question is that what is the difference between church and temple? Do you have different church and temple for Mormonism?
Yes, they keep us very, very busy. So you go to church, anyone is welcome to come to church, sit on the church buildings, chapels, you could call them. It says visitors welcome. Anyone can attend every Sunday. Temple, you have to have 2 interviews and be considered worthy to enter in to a temple. You have to be an active tithe-paying member. You cannot be drinking alcohol, coffee, or green or black tea to go to a temple. If you are, you're not allowed to go. You can't be sexually active unless you're except to someone that you are legally and lawfully wedded to, and they have to be of the opposite sex. Otherwise, you're not allowed to go to the temple. So that's a big difference is temple. You have to be worthy to attend. And there they do rituals that get you into heaven. You learn in the temple, you learn handshakes, keywords, and signs to enter through the veil into the essentially what they call the celestial kingdom of heaven. So heaven has tiers. It's almost like a caste system, like the top tier, middle tier, bottom tier. And you learn all about that in the temple. And yeah, it's a place to do what they call ordinances. And you also perform work for people who have died there, not died at the temple, but you do work for people who have died. So say my great, great grandpa was never baptized. I actually would do family research on the computer and I would find, you know, his death record, birth certificate, things like that. And I'd say, oh, look, he has not been baptized as a member of this church. So I would go to the temple. I would perform the baptism for him. Someone would baptize me in behalf of my uncle, grandpa, or whatever. And so that he could also have the blessings associated with those ordinances and covenants. So then I would go through an initiatory for it. So it's baptism, receiving the gift of the Holy Ghost is another ordinance, initiatory, endowment, and then the fifth and final ordinance of the temple is being sealed to someone of the opposite sex, which is like a marriage. And if you don't do all those things, you can't return to live with God, or as they call him, Heavenly Father and Jesus. So yeah, temple is a very different than church.
It sounds like a cult to me.
Yeah. So if you do, Stephen Hassan, who is a cult expert, he has a formula essentially called, or it's called the BITE model. So it stands for behaviors, information, thoughts, and emotions. And you can do your own analysis of the church with each of those topics and decide for yourself if the church is a cult, if it's a destructive cult, if it's a benign cult, where it falls on the spectrum of being a cult. So in my opinion, when I've done the assessment, and there's a website called isitculty.com, and it'll spit out a score. You answer all the questions about your organization, and it'll tell you on this spectrum, is your organization culty? I did that assessment, and the church is very culty.
So Kyle, so why did you do all of that mission work, service work, church work, doing all those ceremonies for your dead family members? Who was influencing you? How did you get influenced at the young age?
Yeah, I mean, to me...
Or brainwashed.
I was born into it. I felt very happy and fulfilled. I had a mission, a purpose. They make you feel very elite, special, privileged. You're a savior to all these people, those kind of things. So like really it got to my head that I was doing a good work. I was doing good deeds. I was serving humanity. I was serving God. And there was nothing more or better that I could be doing with my time. I would say, if the church is true, what else matters? And that's kind of, everything in my life revolved around church. My relationships, my work, my fun, my rest, my relaxation, everything was tied to the church. Everything, every aspect.
And so when did you realize that church isn't true?
Actually it was in 2020 and church is closed. And
COVID, due to COVID.
Because right. of due to, yes, COVID. And my wife and I just basically had time to start thinking for ourselves because we were so busy 24/7 that we never had time to really, you know, be mindful or aware or conscious. And COVID really opened our eyes. So I'll go back to 2015. We went to St. Louis, Missouri, where I was attending graduate school for physical therapy. And Jamie had kind of a mini faith crisis, as we call it.
What does that mean?
Yeah. So what that means is she started questioning if the church was what it claimed to be. She was like, man, what? Because their policy changed in 2015 for people who were in the LGBT community, which said if their children wanted to be baptized, the children of a same-sex couple, they had to wait till they were 18 and disavow their parents' marriage. And that really kind of was like, wow, how does that make sense? I thought the sins of parents did not get passed down to their children. Aren't we only accountable for our choices and decisions? And so it just kind of like, and she was really burned out. She had a lot of church responsibility, leadership, service. She was working very, you know, overwhelmed. And so that kind of broke her open a little bit to like, is this really how I want to live my life? Is this really, am I really doing what I should be? And she ended up emailing her family and saying, help me, I'm having trouble. And they all reassured her. And, you know, you get into your echo chamber and everyone reassures you, no, this is real, this is true, all that, you know. So we read things even at that time that were not in favor of the church. We read a book called Rough Stone Rolling, which talks about a lot of the hard things in the church's history that are hidden from the church members. Things like Joseph Smith marrying other women behind his wife, Emma, his first wife's back without her knowing. At very clear, like, deceit and, you know, doing really, you could say, bad things. He was sinning. Mm-hmm. And we learned about those things, but we were able to what we call mental gymnastics and come up with thought-stopping cliches like, God's ways are not our ways, right? Just quotes from the Bible. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not unto thine own understanding.
It's like, and you can see the reality, but you are brainwashing yourself. You're not trying to lean into that reality. You're trying to just bullshit yourself. And that's what we all do outside the church when we have that blindfold. We don't want to see the reality as is.
Yep. Yeah. Confirmation bias really pulled us right back to being in the church for another 7 years after that.
So your wife Jamie had gotten to some mini faith crisis back in 2015, and I'm curious. So since you both were so involved in the church and the activities around that, how were you able to manage your personal life, your married life, and your kids' life? How were you spending time with each other?
We didn't have kids until 2018, and so we had, you know, 3 more years. We have a really good relationship. We just communicate really well. Our give and take, our service, our sacrifice for each other, everything is very healthy as far as, like, you know, kind of butting heads or contention, you might call it. We just don't have any of that. We are really good about just being kind and understanding and open, willing to change our minds, see different perspectives.
Now, how about back in 2015?
Yeah, even then, there was no hard feelings. There was no anger, animosity. I mean, we feel really lucky to have found each other. You could say we owe the church to that because we met in a church. We had, you know, so there's definitely good that has come out of being in the church. You can't say that it's all bad or all wrong. I don't want to give that impression to people, even though that's the impression that I'm giving, because I'm talking about all the things that weren't good about it. But there's a lot of positive aspects, of course. Otherwise, people wouldn't, you know, be a part of it. So yeah, really, we just open communication, willing to give and take. I think those are really important principles of having a strong and healthy relationship. So I listened to her, active listening, trying to understand where she was coming from, trying to help her. So really, it went as well as it could. And I was able to help her get back into her brainwashed state. and we continued onward. So
her transition process started before you.
Yeah, definitely.
So is there anything else you want to discuss about your church life? What were the positives and what were some of the... Let's talk about the positives that you took away from the church besides meeting your wife.
Yeah, I would say the church did teach us to seek for truth. And honestly, that gave us permission in 2020 to question. You know, the church also, you know, it's kind of... They have both... They also say... One of the famous quotes is, doubt your doubts before you doubt your faith, and to remember what you know and what you already know. It's really faith-centric. Like, if evidence comes in or information that is contradictory to the church, doubt that first. Remember what you already know. And another common metaphor that they give is to put your questions on a shelf, just like, store it away, put it away, and wait for God to answer your question, or it will all work out in the next life. And so you just kind of forget things and you just move on. And But anyway, the whole point of that,
which
like,
is a good
positive
thing. Which is a good thing, right?
Yeah. So it taught us to seek truth, and it gave us purpose, meaning, we certainty. We knew where we came from, why we're here on this earth, and where we're going after that. It answered the questions of the soul. Mm. So, in that regard, we were very happy. We had meaning. So I think those are the main positives that the church offered. It's a great community. You have a lot of people that care about you. They'll give you casseroles when you need food. They'll help you move if you're leaving the area. Yeah, they give you hope. So I think those are the positive aspects of the church. And then I would say all those things aren't necessarily unique to the church. A common phrase of people that leave the church is, all that's good in the church is not unique to the church, and all that's bad in the church is unique to the church. So do you really need the church? In my opinion, you don't. And hence, that's why we left. So, I mean, there's a lot of other things that I could talk about aspects of the church that are harmful.
We can go into that. Yeah, if you feel comfortable. Yeah, please feel free to.
Yeah, I've got a whole list of things that I had to process as I was, you know, disagreeing with things that I was finding out that I just didn't know about. That number one thing was the LGBTQ policies and the way that the church viewed those people in that community, the way they treated them, the things they said about them. That was the main thing that started our whole journey out of the church, was listening to people who had been harmed by the church. So we had friends, I mean, you know, a lesbian couple that got married a year ago, almost to the day, was a wedding we went to in July of 2022. So I guess to give you a little bit more of a timeline, so we started questioning the church in 2020 and learned about things such as patriarchy, which, if people aren't really familiar, it's very male-centric. Women are almost second-class citizens. In the church, they cannot be leaders over men. And so there's some inequality. And, you know, I could talk about how they rationalize that. And, you know, they, women are to be mothers. And then, okay, well, then what about women that are infertile? If their whole purpose is to be a mother and they're infertile, how does that make them feel? And then they'll rationalize it with, they'll have children in the next life. They'll raise kids in the next life. So that's how they'll fulfill their purpose as a mother.
And who is going to see the next life? Nobody is going to see the next life. We already have this life. We are living this present life.
Yeah. So that's one of the major takeaways. I'm glad you brought that up, is this not being present. When my brother died, I was totally, essentially void of any grief. I mean, because I'm going to see him in the next life. He's in a better place. Like, we have what we call the plan of happiness, the plan of salvation, which means we know where he's going and that he'll be okay and we'll see him again. And we don't need to be sad, because it's viewed, if you're sad about a death, you're not having enough faith. Hmm. You don't trust in God's plan for his life or timing. So grieving.
First of all, I'm so sorry to hear about your brother.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So essentially the things that just really bothered us were how women were treated, how people who were gay were treated, people of other races for the majority of the church's existence. People of color were not allowed to have the authority called the priesthood, so they weren't allowed to be leaders. Women weren't allowed to attend the temple if they were black. they're of African descent. You could not worship in the holiest place in the world, which is the temple, according to the church. And so there's racism, sexism, homophobia. They taught, you know, harmful ideas about you have to be obedient to get blessings. And so that really messes with your mind. Like, so if something goes wrong, you think you're not worthy, or they'll spin it. And if you are doing everything, well, it's just a trial then. It's not because you're not worthy. So yeah, I mean, and then the use of all the tithing, you know, the Securities Exchange Commission just fined the church $5 million because they were being deceitful on how they were filing their taxes and, or not, well, taxes, then just their, how they weren't reporting how they were investing their money. That's the SEC deals with that. Who knows what's going to happen with the IRS and taxes, but yeah. So, I mean, just a lot of really hard things to swallow that the church was doing, but that we weren't aware of until we started doing our own research. And that's how cults control people, is through the eye and the bite model. They control your information. It was not encouraged to read anything published outside of the church. Like, I would look at books and does this have the church stamp of approval? Does it have the church logo on it? And if it didn't, it wasn't to be trusted. It was probably anti-Mormon literature that was trying to lie to me and deceive me. And it was Satan, the devil, Lucifer. He was attacking me and attacking my faith and attacking God's only true and living church upon the face of the earth. You know, that was the message that was being sent by the church.
Are you saying that you did not read any personal development or self-help book when you were practicing Mormonism?
I would say it wasn't that, those kind of things weren't necessarily discouraged. In fact, Stephen R. Covey wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He's a very prominent member of the church. And so, no, and the church, you know, again, says seek all truth, anything good or praiseworthy or of good report, you know, is of God, and it's something that we seek after. It's one of the articles of faith. So it's not necessarily that they tell you you can't, but you're so busy with reading church-approved materials, you don't really have time to explore other religions or philosophies. They demonize other people's ideas in the temple. They call it the philosophies of men mingled with scripture. And so they're saying those people are just making things up and it's just their ideas. So it was another way of like saying we have the fullness of joy in our church, the whole truth, all the truth. And they would say, yeah, you know, bring your truth and add ours to it. It was never, let's go and see what other people think and bring our truth and add it to our truth. It was like, we already had everything you needed to be happy, truly happy, true joy in this life. So, yeah, so it's kind of, yeah, in a way, they frame it very carefully. It's a very mainstream cult, because most people, unless you really dig deep, see the church and the members as happy, honest, kind, smiley humans. You don't really understand the dark side or see all the other things. And even when you're in it, you don't see it. So it's really an interesting organization. Yeah.
So going back to 2 years ago when you started your faith transition, how did your family respond to this transition process, and how do they feel now?
Well, it's very hard on people that are in the church to see their family or friends leave the church. It's a spectrum. So we had someone comment and say that they'd lost a loved one, their daughter, to be exact, and said, us leaving the church was worse than their daughter dying. And we're just friends, neighbors. And that's the perspective. Like, we're eternally damning ourselves and our kids, our girls, because we've left the church. So they would say things, other comments were like, well, I understand this is your, they call it agency, your freedom to choose. But your children, what about your children? Your sins and your choices are going to affect them. So you have to think about that, wow. Right? So there's that. And then I was also said that I was being deceived by Satan, which I mentioned before. Another thing that they said was I was rebelling because throughout my life for 34 years, I was very straight arrowed in the church, right? I was very obedient, happily and joyfully, cheerfully obedient, serving in the church, giving my money to the church, my time. I mean, you make a covenant in the temple to give all of your time, resources, and even your own life, if necessary, to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You make that promise. In the presence of God, angels, and these witnesses. Those are the exact words. And so you raise your arm and you bow your head and you say yes and you promise to even give your own life. So, I mean, it's a very heavy, I took it very serious. You know, some people don't. They have a healthy relationship with the church in a sense that, in a healthy meaning, they don't follow all the rules. they kind of think for themselves a little bit. And, you know, and some of my best friends, two of my closest friends who are still very much active in the church, is because they're able to have kind of a nuanced approach to their membership, you know, somewhat of a progressive view on the world. And they don't quite buy into everything, but they still, you know, pay their tithing, serve in the callings, and they've figured out a way to kind of make it work. So there's those people that, from their perspective, they don't look at it as serious as some of those other comments that I mentioned that have been said to us about our detrimental decision to step away from the church. So yeah, it's a spectrum. So far, our families, you know, other than being very disappointed and sad, they've come to terms with it. And the way they say, it'll all work out in the end. You'll come around in the next life and it'll all be okay. You'll come back to the church eventually. So that's kind of what
they have this hope that you will come back to the religion, not even not in this life, in the next life.
That's the only way that they can make it through life without being completely depressed and overwhelmed with grief and sorrow and sadness is, no, you'll come around. This is the true church. If you're seeking truth, you're good people, you'll come around and you'll see it eventually.
I think this, in my opinion, this is spiritual bypassing. You're not allowing yourself to feel sad or disappointed or angry, and you're believing, being optimistic is great, but you're not allowing yourself to feel any sadness. You're just believing and hoping that this will change. Do you think this is spiritual bypassing? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Emotions and feeling your emotions, that emotional health and awareness is not something that is encouraged in the church. I mean, your podcast, Emotional, you know, Regulation, right?
Right.
That's not something that we're taught. That's not, I mean, psychologists and psychology and therapists, mental health professionals are not, I mean, it's getting better. The church has their own mental health professionals. So you go to an LDS therapist, Latter-day Saint. That's another name for Mormonism. Those are the therapists that you'd go to because they have a gospel perspective. And it's almost, yeah, I mean, they're becoming better at accepting therapy and emotions, but anger is really not an emotion that is, anger's of the devil. Grief means you're faithless. I mean, I'm going to say that it does, it's not all like, it's not hardcore that way. There are, you know, speakers and talks that have been given talking about emotions and feeling, and, but still, I think, yeah, there is always that underlying tone of you need to have faith and trust in Jesus, what they call the atonement, the sacrifice that Jesus made. It means that he's felt all of our emotions, he's felt all our sorrow, and he's taken them upon himself, and he's already borne the pain for you on your behalf so that you don't have to feel those pains. You just need to give your life up to Jesus, give your hardships and your trials to Jesus, and he'll take care of it. So it's almost like a way of, like I told you, like when my brother passed away, that's what I did. So that I didn't have to feel the grief or the pain or the sorrow, because Jesus took care of it. I have the plan of salvation. I have the true and living gospel in my life. I don't need to feel bad. So yeah, that's the churches. That's how they deal with hard things.
So how do you feel about your brother passing now? Do you feel grief? Do you allow yourself to feel those emotions now?
You know, I'm learning how, but I'm still not very good at feeling my emotions. I'm not good at expressing my emotions or showing my emotions. I would say that I feel, the thing that I feel the most grief about really is I always viewed my brother, who was not active in the church since ninth grade in high school, probably. He really struggled, even eighth grade. He just did not like going to church. He didn't like, yeah. So it was hard for me to have a relationship with him because of the walls that were built between me and him because of the church. You know, I always viewed him as a project, as a missionary opportunity. I had to be an example to him. I had to invite him to read the Book of Mormon. I had to help try to convince him and show him the error of his ways, that he needed to serve a mission, that he needed to figure out a way to find a good Mormon girl to get married in the temple with so that he could have eternal life and have, you know, posterity and kids. So like, the church didn't allow me, I shouldn't blame the church. I'm trying not to blame the church, take responsibility for how I dealt with his death and my relationship with him. You know, it's a hard place. I feel like I'm stuck between a hard place and a rock. I don't know quite how to deal with it all. Like, I would say, looking back, I haven't probably grieved his death as much as I should, but I do feel a lot of regret for how my relationship with him was so, I feel like, tainted by the church. And I don't know how to say that without blaming the church. I feel like I'm blaming the church on my lack of relationship and connection with him. So that, I don't know what to say other than I feel like the church, you know, stole that from me, that I couldn't truly connect with him because I couldn't accept him for who he was and the choices he was making to be his authentic self. You know, he would hang out with people in college. He came to Utah State, and there were people that were doing things that weren't worthy. You know, they would party or whatever they would do, or play pranks or whatever, you know, just things that weren't righteous in the eyes of the church, you know, my eyes, looking at him through the lens of the church. I wasn't able to accept him. I wasn't able to have a real, genuine connection with my brother. And that's what I feel like the church took from me more than anything, was that ability to have that with my brother. Now, with my other brother, who's also a little less rebellious, I shouldn't even say rebellious, because it's not rebellion. It's living a normal, human, authentic life. That's what he was doing. But in my eyes, as a church member, they were rebelling, right? So that's how I viewed it. So from that perspective, yeah, Michael was not as quote-unquote rebellious. I was still not able to truly connect with him. I was always trying to get him to go on a mission too and all those things. But now, since I've left the church, Michael is my youngest brother, the youngest in the family. We've been able to really connect at a lot deeper level because we can talk about anything. We are open to changing our minds. We don't feel like we have all the answers or know everything. And we're able to explore other ways of thinking and viewing the world through Buddhism or whatever it may be. We can take the good from all of these different worldviews and not have them, you know, through a filter or lens of Mormonism.
So you are able to express your emotions with your younger brother now, right? So yeah. Then you open your mind when you have a deeper conversation and connection with someone, you allow yourself to feel, right? So you're already doing that.
Yeah, I definitely have made those changes and improvements. Yeah, I think so. And I'm learning how to accept. I don't want to say that I've learned or mastered the middle way of Buddhism or any of like
nobody's a master.
Yeah.
Nobody's a master.
Right. But I'm learning and I feel like I've made improvements. I feel like I have accepted the past. I've seen the good. I've seen where it's brought me to today. And I'm grateful. I think gratitude is one of the most important aspects of life that really just has really helped me personally, being grateful. And that's something actually that my dad's dad, who's still alive, is really good about teaching is gratitude. He taught my dad and my dad taught me, and I've heard it from my grandpa, just being grateful. And I think that's a really healthy way to live a life. I think it really, I don't know, it solves a lot of problems for me. It's just stepping back and thinking about all the things that I have to be grateful for.
Kyle, I'm curious, where do you stand in your transition process now? What does that look like in 2023?
Yeah, so it's been a long process. 2022, it was a good solid 2 years of deconstructing 32 to 34 years of Mormonism and of, you know, it was an identity crisis. When I came out of the church, I felt like my whole purpose and meaning in life had been, like the rug had been pulled out from underneath me and I was falling. And the deep, deep pain that's indescribable that I felt, you know, it's like a death, a loss. You know, and some people have said that they would have rather been killed or died than have lost their faith in the church. Other former members have said that, have expressed that, because it's that painful and that traumatic. And it just shows kind of how powerful cult mind control is and that brainwashing and how hard it is to get out of it when you've been so dedicated. I mean, there's a lot of people that leave the church and it's no big deal. So it kind of just depends on what level of devotion you are in the organization. It's almost like a balancing, a scale, right? Like if you're really in it, it's going to be really hard to get out. And I experienced that. And so now after a year of being out of the church, we left in April of 2022. I've had a year and several months to process it. And honestly, I've binged a lot of books, and I recently read a book, A Manual for Creating Atheists, that's really helped me understand about being
Manual for Creating Atheists.
Yeah, it's a clickbaity title, but the content and the principles that it teaches about critical thinking and being rational and reasonable and being open to evidence, you know, is really healthy. It's a really, really good book. I would say, you know, atheist in the definition of this book means there's insufficient evidence to warrant a belief and a divine supernatural creator of the universe. And then the author Peter says, if he was shown, and this is how I fall into the same line of thinking at this point, is if I was shown sufficient evidence to warrant a belief in such an entity, then I would believe. So you're open to evidence, you're open to changing your mind. But at this point, I'm an atheist, meaning there's insufficient evidence to warrant a belief. And I don't identify as an atheist because that would be like identifying as a non-leprechaun believer. Like, I don't believe in leprechauns. I don't believe in God, but I don't identify as like, I'm going around saying like, I don't believe in leprechauns. You know, it's kind of a,
do you believe in God now?
No, I'm an atheist. So I, by definition, there's insufficient evidence to warrant a belief in a divine supernatural creator of the universe.
So since you think you're an atheist, so you're not a spiritual as well? Are you spiritual?
Well, so again, faith and spirituality and atheism are not, what's the word? They can coexist, is what I'm trying to say. So faith, in my definition, is pretending to know things you don't know. It's a word you use when you don't have enough evidence to justify holding a belief, but you believe it anyway. You claim knowledge in the absence of evidence, or even when something, you know, when a claim that you're making is contradicted by evidence. And so you use faith, believe in something anyway. So I believe in being reasonable, rational, thoughtful, kind, to have empathy, to be reasonable, sincere, use the scientific method. I feel like faith is built on delusion, pretending, fear, pseudoscience, superstition. You make choices based on unseen forces because of you're scared of the devil or these demons. And I think that's all harmful to society. And so I do not think that being spiritual, I believe in being spiritual. And maybe we need to define, in my definition, I think it was Brené Brown. Yeah. So her definition of spirituality is recognizing and celebrating that we are all inextricably connected to each other by a power greater than all of us, and that our connection to that power and to one another is grounded in love and compassion. So I believe spirituality, how I've interpreted it, is connection to myself, to people, and the universe, nature, animals, the mountains, the ocean, the earth. So that's spirituality to me. I don't feel like spirituality has any, there's no need for religion. There's no need for faith.
Right.
You know, faith is not hope. Faith is not trust. I think faith is pretending to know something you don't know. Where hope is where you look forward to something, but it's not like you believe it or know that it's going to happen. You hope for things. I believe in being present. I believe in being mindful. I believe in being compassionate, all those things. Being atheist doesn't mean I told you what it means. There's insufficient evidence to warrant a belief in a divine. That's it. If you try to,
we're sharing. Yes. Yeah. I think atheism can have a negative connotation in the spirituality, in the world of conscious communities. It can have negative connotation that you don't believe in the higher power, right? For me, you know, I've always believed that spirituality is, there is something bigger than me. There is some higher power. Have I really seen that higher power? No, but there is this trust, there is this faith that there is something bigger than me that exists, right? And if you truly look into spirituality, we are part of nature. Nature is in us. We are in the nature. We all are connected to each other through love, compassion, kindness.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I still can't think of the word that's on the tip of my tongue, but being spiritual and being an atheist are not, they can coexist. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. So Kyle, fast forward, and I want to talk about your entrepreneurship journey. You know, you are a physical therapist. You used to be a physical therapist, and you are working on a new venture, your new entrepreneurship. Would you mind talking about your new business idea or the new businesses that you've been working on now?
Yeah. So another optimistic outlook of 2020 for us was I lost my job working as a physical therapist in a hospital in Sun Valley. And we moved to Utah, where I thought I would get a job as a physical therapist at Utah State. That didn't pan out. So our business, Quick Camo, that my dad and his hunting friend started in 2008, was about to go out of business in 2020. And so because I was out of a job and my dad was getting into real estate and not, he was just going to let Quick Camo go to the wayside, I stepped in and have worked on it for 3 years and have grown it immensely, rebranded, redesigned all the products, the website, Amazon. I mean, basically built the business up again from scratch. And it's been a really great learning opportunity. It's given me the freedom to process my faith transition. With if I was working in a clinic 8 to 5 or 6 every day and then having family responsibilities and church, and I wouldn't be where I'm at today. Like, there's just no way. But because I was running my own business, I was more flexible in my hours and my time, and I was able to focus on my family and just, you know, I had the freedom to explore my faith. I am where I am today. So I'm really grateful for entrepreneurship, for, you know, this business that my dad basically, you know, gave to me. And it was a great opportunity. You know, he had suppliers for the headwear, a really good supplier who's helped me. This supplier's helped me find a manufacturer for gloves. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. Could you talk more about your business? Like, what is that about? What is that about? You know, you said about hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. So Quick Camo, that's the name of the brand. Started off with just hats with built-in face masks for archery hunters. And that developed over time into other products, and that I've helped develop with bucket hats with masks with leaves on them to help people blend in. So the mission of the company is we design innovative and high quality camo gear that helps create lasting outdoor memories. You know, our vision is to enhance the outdoorsmen and women's experience by helping them get close, up close and personal with wildlife undetected. And so you can be a wildlife photographer. We have several professional photographers that have great YouTube channels, and they use our camo to do photography. But I mean, the core market is people who hunt, and mostly turkeys.
Do you hunt?
I'm not super big into hunting myself. I'm not a vegan or a vegetarian, but I guess, I don't know. It's just my connection with animals is a little different. If it's that personal, taking the life of the animal, I really appreciate it. I've learned to appreciate the circle of life, and I understand that, you know, there's carnivore animals and they get their nutrition and from, you know, eating the baby deer. The coyote kills the baby deer and then the vultures eat it, and then it goes back. And, you know, so I'm not opposed to hunting. I don't think it's evil. I don't think it's wrong. I think it can be abused. People can hunt for sport where they don't eat or respect the animals, or they're just doing it to get a trophy. I think there's, but yeah. So as far as that goes, I think there are some negative aspects of hunting for sure. It's a controversial topic. Guns are involved a lot of times, or bows. But overall, I think it's a skill that is important to learn. I think harvesting your own meat is better than going to the grocery store and buying hamburger that's been, you know, potentially inhumanely slaughtered. And so, yeah, so I don't know if that answers your question. I know.
It does.
Yeah. But so anyway, I think, yeah, so that's the company. We've designed and developed several products now. We're not a huge business. We're family owned and operated. We put the customer first and are really good with working with anyone if they have any issues or anything like that. But yeah, so that's a business that's allowed me to really come alive, to follow my passions. And right now I'm working on creating faithtransition.org to interview, but really it's to build a community that can bridge the gap of people who are like the all-in members to people that are kind of progressive, to people that like me who have left the church. So I want to interview like coaches and mentors, mental health professionals and therapists that can give some insight, you know, share their story, their background a little bit, and then give some insight into how they help people across the faith transition spectrum, you know. So that's kind of what I'm developing right now, and that's going to lead into mindfulness product that I'm working on called Mindful Moments that will help people really kind of tune in and be aware throughout the day. So I've got several products in that genre that I'm working on. And that's kind of where my passion lies. And I'm going to be interviewing, you know, life coaches or therapists. And I'm looking at some life coaching courses right now so that I can get into that myself and, you know, help people go through what I've just gone through over the last 3 years. Because it's traumatic, it's painful. And we hired a faith transition coach that really helped.
I was about to ask you the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was amazing. The acceleration of knowing how to deal with the transition by talking to someone who's been through it and who has been trained on coaching was worth every penny we spent on that. And so, yeah, so that's what I feel like the universe is pulling me in that direction. Like that's where my flow in the universe is, like hunting and camo. Like I really, it's given me a good lifestyle to be present with my kids and my wife, to be home and all that, to work from home and have flexibility. But it's almost like a means to an end. And I don't feel like it's where the universe is not pulling me into creating camouflage apparel. And so, but I'm grateful for it at the same time.
Yeah, it pays bills and nothing has to be forever, right? This is working for you. Maybe in the future, there is going to be something else.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle, this has been a great conversation. So I wonder if you want to cover more topics, anything else that come to mind before we wrap up? What do you think?
Yeah. So I think ultimately, I feel like I'm grateful for what I've gone through with my faith transition. I have learned a lot. My mind has opened up. I feel like I've awakened from a deep sleep being in the church and just having this kind of like cloud over my head for 32 years lifted. And I can see for the first time, I can connect to humanity, to people. I'm more spiritual as an atheist than I ever was as a religious person, you know? I like the deep love and connection that I feel with other people is just profound. It's undescribable. And the first time I felt that was in the middle of the faith crisis, but when I was really like, wow, the church is not, I was like far enough along where basically it was like, I freed myself, but I was still working through it. And when I saw our neighbor who was less active, that I used to be like, how can I help them get back to church? Or what can I do? I gotta, you know, try and, you know, it's all with good intentions. But like the first time I saw them for who they were, it was just this overwhelming feeling of love that I had never felt before. And that's, you know, one of the evidences that I knew that I was on the right track and that what I was doing, despite my programming and conditioning, telling me, you know, like warning, you're going in the wrong direction. You're getting led by Satan. When I felt this profound love for that person, I knew that I was on the right track. And so that's what I'd leave you with is, yeah.
Well done, my friend. Love. And my last question is, if you get your parents to listen to this podcast episode, how would they feel?
You know, my parents are really loving and open, and I think they would appreciate it. I know it was especially hard for my mom, and I know my dad, you know, he's a little more, I think, progressive in his, the way he thinks, and he's not really rigid. My mom just loves what the church has done for her, and, you know, having the answers and the certainty. And but, you know, she's expressed some openness lately, and doesn't. Yeah. So I think they would be okay. Long story short,
other I'm people, happy to hear that they'll be okay.
Yes. I think they would be happy to listen. I think other people in the church may not be as, you know, excited, or they would just say, oh, you've been deceived, or you're just tricking yourself, deceiving yourself. But yeah, my parents, luckily, I think they would be happy to hear.
We'll make this episode viral in the church. Well, thank you so much, my friend.
I'll definitely share it with them.
That was a beautiful conversation.